tonight, what I want to talk with you about, we're going to jump around. This is, I guess you could consider a topical lesson rather than a textual lesson. And I guess it's more of a warning lesson or an admonishing lesson. Some folks might say it's kind of a negative lesson in ways. And by that I mean it's not warm and fuzzy. It's not encouraging in certain ways. But I want to just look at possibly some dangers, if you will. And dangers really that have to do with... Let's see if this works. There we go. Dangers that have to do with our marriage relationships. Now, a lot of the things we'll talk about would also certainly apply to other relationships, or would certainly apply to our spiritual relationship with our Father in Heaven. But if you will, just indulge me tonight. Let's talk about some things for those of us that are married, or for those of us who young folks who will plan to get married at some point. Some things that could be very toxic and poisonous to the marriage relationship, because we want to be aware of these things and we want to guard against them, because we know the Lord gave us marriage. He designed that man and woman should be together, and for this bond. You know, there's nothing more beautiful than a godly Christian marriage and the family and the strength and the unity that comes in that sort of bond. So we want to maintain our marriages, and so we want to guard against several things. And the first of those that we'll talk about, if I hit the right button here, the first of those that we'll talk about tonight, I think is something that I have been guilty of, certainly, and probably all of us at some point, but... something that could certainly be toxic to our marriage is overcommitting ourselves and just being physically exhausted all the time that we're with our partner. You know, you think about, especially perhaps someone in my stage of life or before, and think about all the things that a new couple or young couple have to think about and go through, especially those with young children. I think about... Shantae and I got married about a week after we graduated, both of us from college. We immediately moved across the country, okay, which in a lot of ways was good. We'll talk about point number four here in a minute. So a lot of ways was good for us. But another way, so a lot of new changes, all right. I was in grad school. About a year and a half later, about a year later, we're expecting Corinne, all right. 2 years later, or 9 months later, okay, so 2 years after we're married, Corinne comes into the picture. I'm just finishing my master's degree, okay, and if you get a master's degree in music, the job prospects are not immediate, okay? So I'm thinking, okay, all right, I've got a wife, I've got a kid, I have no idea how I'm going to support them. And so then we make a move, okay, shortly after that summer I graduate, we make a move out to this area in Philadelphia. I continue in school for another year, okay, and I'm trying to work part-time, and we're taking out, you know, loans just to, you know, pay bills and things. So all these kinds of things, and then, of course, you know, we're committed Christian parents. We want to make sure that, you know, someone is home to train and guide the kids. So that means, guess what, you know, I've got to be out there, you know, providing financially, okay, which puts a lot on my wife, as far as the duties at the home, so both of us, you know, by the end of the day, are just kind of sitting there looking at each other like, you know, we have to do this again tomorrow, right? Okay, and so it's very easy, I think, for young couples particularly, but for anyone, just to become physically exhausted. And so at times, certainly, you know, sometimes in life are more difficult than others, but we need to be careful that we don't agree to commitments that perhaps aren't too important, or agree to things that are going to get in the way of our relationship with our spouse, our relationship with our brethren. And we want to make sure that certainly the only time that we're with our partner, our spouse, is, you know, late at night when we're just completely exhausted and about all we can say is, I love you, honey, and crash, you know. That's not a good way to build a strong marriage. So let's look at a couple passages here with this in mind. Of course, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2, kind of talks about, you know, of course, the physical bond of marriage is sort of a glue that helps hold things together. But if you never have time for one another, and you're so exhausted that you can never make time for each other in any way, whether to be alone or to go out without the kids, or just to talk with one another, I've been guilty of that, certainly, just being so busy that we don't find enough time to talk. But these things can get in the way. 1 Corinthians 7:2, but because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another. So certainly when we make this commitment in marriage, we are giving ourselves to that other person physically, but also emotionally, certainly, and spiritually. And so we want to make sure that we have the time and we have the energy that we need to devote to one another. And we need to keep that forefront in our minds. So overcommitment and physical exhaustion can be toxic or poisonous to the marriage relationship. Another thing, Al probably has a very good statistic on this. I didn't happen to look it up, but if you look at the number of couples that have gotten in trouble or have split or have even divorced over financial issues or money problems, I know it's way up there at the top. So a lot of times, conflicts or arguments about how to spend money or how to use money or not having enough money or not thinking you have enough money or borrowing excessively, these can create excess tension, certainly on each individual. And then when each individual in the marriage is strained, certainly there's going to be extra friction that doesn't need to be there. So what does the Bible say about, excessive debt? Well, certainly we're all familiar with Proverbs 22, right, in verse 7. If you want to turn over there and remind yourself, Proverbs 22:7, this is the passage that talks about how the borrower is slave to the lender. And you think about the idea of being a slave, nobody wants to be a slave. Certainly we enjoy our freedoms, but when we take on, excessive financial commitments or things, and in a lot of ways we might take things on, thinking, well, we can handle this, but then what if something goes wrong, right? The Lord guarantees He'll provide for us, but maybe not always at the same level that we currently enjoy. So we have to consider these things. But Proverbs 22:7, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender. So certainly, putting ourselves into financial bondage and into, slavery, debtor slavery, is not going to help ease any of the tensions in our marriage. Look at Romans 13 with me. Romans 13 and verse 8 says, "Owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law." So we're to owe no one really anything. I'm not saying that it's wrong to ever borrow money. I certainly can't stand here and tell you that, or I'd be a hypocrite. But I think we want to be careful. And we want to think about the strain and the stress that these things could put on our marriage relationship. And it's interesting here in Romans 13:8 that he talks about the only thing we want to owe one another is to love each other. And so that's what we want to be giving to our partner, to our spouse. We don't want to be giving them undue stress and strain and heartache about worrying, how we're gonna pay our commitments. All right, so first two, pretty big, pretty important. Next, let's think about selfishness. This we could probably put, again, just as easily right at the top. These are not in any order necessarily. But the commitment, when we enter the marriage relationship and when we make that sort of commitment, pretty much everyone makes a vow or makes a statement of what they're promising to give to their partner. And if we are to be married in the way that God would have us to be, and turn to passages like Ephesians 5, which Kendrick happened to mention in his lesson this morning. If you'd like to turn there, we're going to read some things from there in a moment. But when we think about the kind of selfless attitude that Christ had toward us, toward His church, And we think about that he instructs us then to treat our spouse that way, husbands to treat their wives in that same manner, and certainly wives to give selflessly to their husbands and to submit to them. Then certainly there's no room for selfishness, and selfishness will destroy the marriage relationship. A lot of people like to talk about givers and takers. And there's a lot of folks, you know, a lot of young folks in our society being brought up today that are just, you know, the way they're brought up, they're good at taking, they're good at consuming, okay? They're not always good at giving, especially giving of themselves. But yet when we enter the marriage relationship, that's what we're expected to do. And I know myself, I've always, you know, I'm guilty of this at times too, of not always being giving of myself or my time as freely as I should to my wife. And it's something we need to guard against. Ephesians 5, and we'll go ahead and read this because we're going to refer back to this passage several times. But Ephesians 5 and 22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. And down in verse 28, in the same way husbands should love their wives as their own bodies, he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Do we nourish and cherish one another? Certainly we ought to think about that. And then it goes on, verse 30, because we are members of his body, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So there's no room for selfishness. There's not really a lot of room for interference from outside participators or you know, backseat drivers, if you will, in the marriage. Parents, in-laws, okay, could be other folks as well, but typically this is what people think. The verse we just read there, verse 31 of Ephesians 5, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. You know, that's a quote from back in Genesis 2 and 24. And I'm sure you probably all, you think back in your mind, those of you that are a little bit older than myself, and that's not old, okay? But you think back, you've probably known some people that at some point, you know, maybe early in their marriage, their parents or one of them would run to their parents whenever there was some sort of marital argument or strife or discourse. And does that usually help the situation? Now, what it usually does is, you know, okay, well, you've got your team in this corner, you've got your team in this corner, and you're going to duke it out until the last one left standing wins. But husbands and wives need to learn to work out their own differences. That's just part of it. And I know that those of you who are married, you know exactly what I'm talking about, probably even much better than I do at this point. But so we don't want to let other folks, whoever they might be, intrude on that relationship. We're supposed to cleave husband and wife one to another, and we're supposed to value the sanctity of that relationship above all others. Unrealistic expectations, all right? How might this be toxic to our relationship? How might, you know, say a young bride, okay, she's been dreaming of her wedding, you know, her wedding day for, you know, umpteen years, okay? And she's, you know, she's got this perfect fairy tale wedding in mind. Okay, she gets the fairy tale wedding, all right? But then 6 weeks down the road, the honeymoon's over, and she's sitting around, okay, home by herself, wondering, you know, wow, this is really not what I had in mind. This is a little bit different. This is tough. Now I have to wash dishes and I have to do this, and or I've got to work and we're both working and I never see my Prince Charming anymore. We're never together unless it's late at night. And then we have to talk about bills, or we have to talk about budgeting, or we have to talk about, you know, calling the landlord to fix this leaky faucet or something. So I think if we're not careful, a lot of us can go into marriage with some unrealistic expectations. And these could come from wherever. They could come from movies, certainly, okay? They could come from anything. They could come just, I think, from, you know, certainly we all have, you know, visions of what the ideal thing would be like, right? And most people, the ideal life doesn't involve much work, okay? And the ideal marriage doesn't involve much time away. You just want to spend time together. But sometimes these aren't real. So if we put unrealistic expectations on the marriage itself or on our lifestyle or on our spouse, I think we're asking for trouble. What the picture we get in Ephesians 5 is a picture of both having to work at this relationship, but both having to give to this relationship to make it work. So we want to make sure that our expectations going into this are real. And if we have a rude awakening once we're married, then we have to just, you know, I guess grow up and become an adult in a lot of ways and do what the Lord has commanded us to do, and that's to love our spouse and to fulfill our responsibilities. And I think as we do that, we find that it gets easier over time and we learn to love those responsibilities. All right, number six, space invaders. And I'm not talking about green Martians, okay, that come down and abduct your spouse and therefore ruin your marriage relationship. No, I'm talking about folks that could, again, get in the way of your space, sort of like number four. But this could also come from the husband or wife themselves. Look with me at 1 Peter 3 and 7. I think we've probably all known some folks that, you know, especially couples when they're first together and they never want to be separated and they want to be together all the time and they're able to do that. But after a while, you know, at least, you know, that's not going to work, at least for one or both of them. And there are going to be times where they're going to need to be apart. And that's okay. That's a healthy thing. 1 Peter 3 and 7 says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." And so the point I think that I was making with this verse was just that it says, husbands, dwell with your wives with understanding. I think we could flip that around certainly as well. Wives need to dwell with their husbands in understanding and realize that at times, you know, we need a certain amount of space in order just not to suffocate. I'm not saying that it's healthy for a couple to be apart all the time or to live apart from one another. I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that's what God intended for married couples to be apart from one another in those capacities. And I've known several couples that have done that for what was supposed to be a temporary amount of time and they've grown apart over the months and the years. But we certainly, you've probably known, you know, the young bride that as soon as the husband gets home, right, she's, you know, at the door waiting for him, and he's just exhausted. He's just drove an hour through traffic, and she's excited to talk to him, so she starts going 90 miles a minute, you know, for about the next hour and a half, and he's just sitting there, lazy-eyed, you know, So, you know, we just need to understand each other's needs in the relationship, and we need to make sure that, again, that we're giving what the partner needs in that relationship. And as Ecclesiastes 3 and 5 says, there's a time to embrace and there's a time to refrain from embracing. Okay, if you embrace all the time, eventually one of you will suffocate. Okay, so we just want to keep things in their proper perspective. And so that's number six, space invaders. Okay, alcohol, substance abuse. Certainly we know the Bible warns against these things. Certainly we know that these can not only destroy a marriage, these can destroy, you know, the individuals in the marriage, and they can destroy lots of other relationships. But let's just look at a couple passages. Proverbs 20, if you're still in Proverbs. Proverbs 20 and verse 1. "Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." If we're going to be sober-minded and if we're going to be able to give and have the energy that our spouse needs from us, we certainly can't be drunk. We can't be, you know, committed to strong drink. You know, we can't do foolish things like that. Proverbs 21 and 17 says, "Whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man. Whoever loves wine and oil
will not be rich.
You know, we talked about earlier, number two, money problems. And so you add, you know, someone who's drinking and spending all this money on alcohol. And so then you've got problems 2 and 7 going on, okay? And then if it gets to the point of addiction or something, then you have a huge problem that, you know, I know that we all understand. You just have to avoid at all costs as Christians. We just cannot go there. Our marriage is too important. Our relationship with our Lord is too important. Our relationship with our brethren is too important. So we want to stay away from those kinds of evils. And number 8 is similar. There's lots of other things, addictions, pornography, gambling. Okay, I've known personally several folks whose marriages were harmed by the husband. He liked to gamble, and he would like to spend money on the weekends and go and gamble it away, and it would stress the wife out to no end, and eventually, you know, help to tear them apart, certainly. You know, the idea of pornography, you know, Jesus says, if you even look at a woman to lust after her, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. And so folks that are seeking these things and are seeking those kind of things, I think a lot of times they might get into it thinking, well, there's no harm in it or just looking. But, you know, Jesus says there is. And once you open that door, more often than not, you know, sin, it just takes control of you, and it takes you way farther than you ever intended to go. Many of you might know Dee Bowman. Dee Bowman has a quote: "Sin always takes you farther than you ever wanted to go, keeps you longer than you ever wanted to stay." And I forget the rest of it, but that's the gist. Okay, so we don't want to start with these things. Pornography can cause, you know, not just the husband, and typically this is a male issue, but it not only caused the husband to have unrealistic expectations again of his spouse, but can cause the bride to resent her husband, certainly, and it draws the two apart. I don't know if any of you saw the movie Fireproof, which came out a few years ago. I don't often recommend movies, but this is one I think that's worth watching. If you're going to sit down and watch a film, and in the movie, I guess it's Kirk Cameron who's playing the main male character, and he has a problem with, you know, computer pornography, and it's helping to destroy his marriage slowly. And so through the movie, he learns, you know, through prayer and help to overcome that addiction, and his wife then in turn learns to forgive him, but. Just all these things, these addictions, you don't want to go near anything that could be so dangerous and so detrimental to such an important relationship. Of course, we know the spiritual consequences of these, but oftentimes there's marital and physical consequences as well. All right, number 9. So sexual frustration in the marriage, okay, or loneliness, low self-esteem, and by that I don't mean, you know, just that you're not puffing one another's egos up. I just mean generally the same idea that the needs, the emotional needs of the partners are not being met. And of course, this idea that the grass is always greener on the other side, right? And a lot of times, these are all lumped together because a lot of times these tend to happen together. Let's look at a couple passages. Hebrews 13:4. Hebrews 13:4. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. And in let's turn to Proverbs. Proverbs 6. Certainly in the Proverbs, there's several warnings against infidelity or against adultery or against, you know, the young man who gets tempted, lured into illicit sexual relationships. Proverbs 6 and 23. For the commandment is a lamp and the teaching a light, and the reproofs of discipline are the way of life, to preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelashes. For the price of a prostitute is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts down a precious life. So, again, things that we need to guard against. A lot of times these feelings perhaps can come up again when couples are not spending enough time with one another. And by time, I mean just not time sitting, you know, beside each other on the couch, you know, watching TV or whatever, but time engaged, talking with one another, building their relationship, talking about their needs and their plans for the future and for their lives and their family. And I've known folks personally that, you know, that never really worked out, you know, their problems sexually or whatever. That's an important part of the marriage relationship. And I think when one spouse is not, you know, their needs are not being met, that can cause a lot of angst and a lot of frustration. So again, if we're to give our partner what they need, we have to work on those things. We certainly don't want them to be lonely. I know a young couple, actually good friends of mine in high school, would have called themselves Christians at least at some point. But I think, again, they got married 22. I played marimba in their wedding, actually. And, you know, several years, you know, we heard that they were having some difficulties. You know, they hadn't been real faithful in attending any church service regularly. They hadn't been real faithful in keeping spiritual, you know, things a priority at all. They were focused on, you know, finishing grad school, and they were focused on, you know, getting their career started. And you know, one thing led to another, and the wife seemed lonely, and the husband was always busy, and then it was vice versa, and she got a new job. And, you know, these things, like, eventually what happened was, you know, they sort of grew apart. They took long vacations separately from each other. One started carpooling with another colleague at work. And you can imagine one thing leads to another. And then, of course, there's infidelity. And that's the end of the story. And at this point, I think, at least legally, they are divorced. So we want to guard against these things. And we want to make sure, again, that we're meeting the needs of our spouse. And we're not doing anything that could put the marriage relationship in jeopardy. No relationship is perfect. Again, I think if we think that we're never going to feel lonely or we're never going to have moments of frustration in our relationship, that's an unrealistic expectation. You know, we can't expect things to be perfect. But we can work on those things. And we can strive to do better. But when we have those frustrations, one thing I would caution us in particular is not to air those frustrations to the wrong parties. I think if we have frustrations, we need to talk to our spouse. We need to perhaps talk to an older brother or sister of the same sex that could perhaps mentor us, give us some encouragement. We certainly don't need to meet some stranger, okay, at work and start airing all our dirty laundry in the marriage and how we feel about our spouse. And then they're like, yeah, what? I feel exactly the same way, you know? I can't tell you how many times I've heard of folks that do just that, and then what happens? Well, this person's unhappy in their marriage, this person's unhappy in their marriage. Oh, well, hey, we have something in common, okay? And guess what? You know, you put two and two together, and after a while, okay, again, you've got a situation that could lead to infidelity. Let's talk about business or professional failure. Certainly, you know, this probably would affect the husband in the relationship more than the female. But, you know, it could be both. A lot of spouses are both working these days, particularly if they don't have children at home. And that's fine. But when frustrations come up in our professional lives, certainly that can harm our own egos. That can harm the family finances, And so we need to just be careful that we don't let this, affect our marriage. So as spouses, if this happens, we need to be supportive, obviously, in such a time of crisis. We need to be supportive of one another, and we need to try and help work through that. I wrote down here Acts 20 and verse 35, and I'm going to turn over there because it's not coming to mind immediately. Acts 20 and 35, Paul speaking here, "In all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way we must help the weak, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" So Paul knows that he had to work hard to provide. And I think all of us know, especially men, know that we're expected to do that for our families and our spouses. And we feel that responsibility on our shoulders. And we know in Timothy where it says, if a man shall not work, neither let him eat. So there's a lot riding on that. And when things aren't always going as well as we'd like or hoped, certainly we might get angry, we might get frustrated. We have to be careful not to take that out on our spouse, not to blame them perhaps for our professional failings, but to ask them to help us and to pray with us. And certainly if the husband loses his job, we see in Proverbs 31, the worthy woman who was out in the marketplace and was working and was selling things so that her family would be clothed in the winter. And so, when things go awry, it's not time to throw in the towel. I think it's time to roll up your sleeves and build something new, hopefully, I can't imagine a Christian wife ever doing this, but I know some women that if their husband lost their big six-figure salary, that they'd pack their bags, they'd be out the door, see you later, okay? But that's not the attitude that we would have as Christians. We want our marriages to succeed. We want to be there for our spouse. We want to support them. That's what we promise them. Well, then what if we're doing incredibly well, okay, in our job, in our profession, in our business? This can almost be as risky or riskier. I think Scott brought this up in the lesson this morning. We were talking in Luke 12. We were talking about covetousness and greed. And I think I may have mentioned at some point, how Jesus said it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than it is for, a camel to go through the eye of a needle. So certainly, having wealth, having these things, while it can be a huge ease, at least on temporary stresses and things, it can be a huge detriment to us spiritually in some ways. And it could also be a huge detriment to our spouse or our families if we let our jobs or our work consume us. And if we're being so successful that we're being offered more and more, opportunities and more positions, and we just roll with that to a point of where we start to realize, I'm really not having a lot of time for my wife, but it's okay. I'm making a lot of money and I need to provide for my family, and that's good. We need to really keep things in perspective. I think that was the takeaway from our Bible study this morning. We need to keep things in the proper perspective spiritually and make sure that we keep first things first. And we talked about Proverbs 38 and 9, right, where the writer says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches." You don't want either extreme. You just want to have what you need, what Christ has promised us. Matthew 6:11. One more passage there. Give us this day our daily bread, right? Forgive us our debts, we have forgiven our debtors. So this is the idea of having what we need. And down in verse 19 through 21, it's saying, do not lay up treasures on earth. If we have all this success in the world, ultimately, how much of it are we going to take with us? Not going to take any of it with us. Not a cent, not a penny, okay? We're going to leave that inheritance to somebody else, okay? We're going to leave all these things. So we need to think about what's going to matter in the eternal. Getting married too young. And I almost hesitated to put this up there because I can't find a passage in Scripture that tells you at what age you should get married. But just consider this with me. We've talked about what God expects of husband and wife. We know from Ephesians 5 that it's a lot of work. Okay? So I would just say this. I don't think it's an age thing. Okay? There's probably some 16-year-olds that are more ready to get married than a lot of 28-year-olds these days. Okay? Just in their maturity level. But I think we need to be at a certain, point, maturity level where we realize what we're getting into, where we realize the commitment we're making, where we realize how much work this is going to be. Again, statistically, I've heard statistics that, at least in our current society, now I realize in some societies folks marry much younger, and I have a feeling that when Mary and Joseph got married, she was not particularly old, okay? So I'm not saying it can't work, or that it's wrong to get married as a teenager. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is we need to be prepared for the commitment. But at least for the typical American, if you will, these days, folks that tend to get married at 16 or 17, I think if you look statistically at the divorce rates, they're like twice as high, okay, as folks that get married, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later. And then if you look at the statistics for folks who get married at 18 or 19 right out of high school, it's still about 1.5 times as likely as those that might get married in their early 20s or later 20s. So I guess statistically, the longer you wait, the more likely it is to succeed. I'm not saying you should do that either. I think it's a good thing to be married. He who finds a good wife finds a good thing, right? I think he who finds a good husband finds a good thing. So if you find a good spouse, okay, you certainly don't want to sit on that forever if you find a good person. So I guess that was the point. That was the point that I had there. Just be ready. So those of you that aren't married yet, okay, I'm not telling you, what's the right age or what's the wrong age. I'm just telling you to make sure you consider it and make sure you've done your study and you've done your homework and you're really ready for that commitment. All right, and so lucky number 13 here. So we've got these 13 unlucky things, okay, that could be toxic to our marriage. There are many more, okay, obviously. But 13, I think, would be the idea of surrendering to the idea of divorce. Certainly we know statistically what has happened over the last few decades in this country, around the world, and it's becoming more and more prevalent. But as Christians, we know that that's not an option. And so, perhaps if the marriage is not as perfect as we'd like it to be, or, our spouse isn't as perfect as we thought they were, or we're not as perfect as we think they are, and we get reminded constantly about it by our spouse, okay? Regardless of how, frustrated at certain points or how difficult, and certainly things are difficult at times. Things can be very difficult at times, especially if we're not being selfless, if we're being a little selfish, things can get ugly in a hurry. But we cannot ever surrender to the idea that divorce is okay. It's not. It's not okay. God intended that, as we read earlier, Genesis 2:24, that a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. Okay? And so the idea is not just that we don't let others interfere, but that we are drawing our strength. Okay? And this bond, this cleaving to our spouse, is the most important relationship save our relationship with God. And so anything, even just thinking about the idea of separating these two that have become one flesh should be unthinkable to us as Christians. Of course, we know that, only, in unmitigated, adulterous, horrific things that happen, where basically the relationship has already been destroyed, right? Someone has been unfaithful. Of course, Christ said in Matthew 19 that it is permissible to put someone away. But I can guarantee you that doesn't heal the pain. It doesn't fix the problems. And even though it might be permissible, it's still a difficult road. Those that would divorce just because, you know, I can't put up with this person anymore and I just need a break and I need to do my own thing and I've changed a lot and they've changed a lot and we just seem to be growing apart. They just think it's going to solve all their problems, and more often than not, it just makes things worse, you know. They're worse off, both of them are worse off financially than they would have been together. Both of them now have all this extra baggage that they will most likely try to take into some other relationship in the future, even if they shouldn't. And I think it just, you know, they find that it doesn't solve the problems. It doesn't heal the hurt. So instead of surrendering to divorce, we need to learn. We need to learn to forgive. We need to learn to love, and we need to learn to be selfless. And we need to learn to guard against all of these things that we've talked about tonight before it ever even gets to that point. So these are just a few things that I think we as Christians need to guard against in our marriages. It could be anything. You know, there, Satan could probably use all kinds of things to drive a wedge between us and our spouse. But I think what we have to remember is that when we make that promise and we make that commitment, that we've given our word, and as Christ said, let your yes be yes and your no be no, that Christ expects us to keep our word. And so no matter how hard things might get at times, we need to honor that commitment. We need to keep our word. And I think if we'll do that, and if we'll work on these things, and if we'll avoid, certainly these are some of the most awful things, but even the little things, the little details that might just irk us the wrong way every day, we need to guard against letting those fester and holding grudges, and we need to just learn to move on and forgive and to want to work together with our spouse. So I hope this has been helpful to you. It's not, like I said, it's not the rosiest of things to consider, but I think it's important things to consider. I know it's important for me to remind myself often of things because, again, I know for me it's very easy to get wrapped up in what I'm doing, you know, or things professionally or new jobs or just, you know, a mountain of paperwork or commitments, and it's very easy for me to let things get in the way of this very, very important relationship. So I hope that it's been helpful. It was helpful to me as I was putting these things through, and I am with renewed zeal and vigor going to pray more diligently about these things and do better. And I hope that all of us will do that.